paper, I'm going to address the question of whether we can care for farm animals. The paper explores the question of whether care between farm animals and people involved in food animal production is possible. As a philosopher, my focus really is more on the definitions of care that I'm going to be raising. And I'm really kind of running these definitions of care, which are normally drawn up in human-human interactions, through, I think, the quite problematic, for the definitions, that is, the mill of food animal production. I'm going to apologise in advance that my work is not more conclusive. I think I raise more questions than I answer, and I was hoping in the time since I submitted this abstract to have answered some of the questions. Instead, I have generated still more questions. So in the paper, I've got four things that I hope to achieve before drawing, as I say, a fairly tentative conclusion. I want to look at the question of what is care, in what ways has care been defined. Relatedly, I then want to look at what the markers of good care have been said to be. I'm going to put forward my own account of care as I find some fault with the conceptions of care which have hitherto been put forward, before going on to the question of using that account of care, whether we can care for farm animals. So what is care? I'm going to draw on the work of three theorists who have all given definitions of care. All of these theorists work in the ethics of care, which is a relatively new moral tradition. It's sort of going back 30 years, really, since the kind of first works in there. This isn't a paper presented from a care ethics angle. I think these definitions of care can be used very much standalone, but I'd be very happy to talk more at the end about the background of these definitions. So the first definition of care I'm going to look at is that of Joan Tronto's. Joan Tronto talks about care on a sort of, she gives a very general definition of care and then a more specific level. More specific definition. So on a general level, Tronto, in conjunction with another author, Berenice Fisher, defines care as a species-specific activity that includes everything that we do to maintain, continue, and repair our world so that we can live in it as well as possible. So that's a kind of general definition of what it is to care. But more specifically and descriptively, if you like, actually describing what goes on when we care for someone, Tronto, again with Fisher, draws out four distinct phases. She talks about caring about, taking care of, caregiving, and care receiving. These four phases of care that Tronto describes have a sort of have their normative counterparts, which she describes the ethical elements of care, which, as I say, correspond to these distinct phases. And she calls this attentiveness, responsibility, competence, and responsiveness. For care to be good care for Tronto, and again, that's a theme I can pick up on later, the distinction between care and good care. It's a mess. If anyone wants to know, even within care ethics, which really ought to be able to handle this distinction. But Tronto says, slightly problematically, for care to be good care, the four ethical elements of care must fit together into a whole, what Tronto terms the integrity of care. Now, something that's not on this slide, but I do want to pick up on, and which may kind of arise as a question, is, well, when we're giving care, what kind of guides us in what we ought to do? Tronto grounds that in a notion of responding to people's needs. That raises the question of which needs should be responded to. Well, she grounds that in a conception of flourishing. So if you want to know which needs you have to rank, which ones you're going to respond to first, which are important, what counts as a need, that is grounded in understanding of human flourishing. So that's Tronto's definition. And now, and I'm sorry, I quote her at some length, so I'm just going to kind of read this. This is from the work of Eva Feder Kitte. Kitte writes, "The term care can denote a labour, an attitude, or a virtue. As a labour, it is the work of maintaining others and ourselves or in a condition of need. It requires skills on the part of the carer and uptake on the part of the cared for. As an attitude, Caring denotes a positive, effective bond and investment in another's well-being. The labour can be done without the appropriate attitude, yet without the attitude of care, the open responsiveness to another that is so essential to understanding what another requires is not possible. That is, the labour unaccompanied by the attitude of care will not be good care. Care as a virtue is a disposition manifested in caring behaviour, the labour an attitude, in which a shift takes place from the interest in our life situation to the situation of the other, the one in need of care. Relations of affection facilitate care, but the disposition can be directed at strangers as well as intimates. So there are two points that I'd like to pick up on in this definition of care of Eva Frieda Kitte. The first one is to define what she means by uptake, and it's really important in Kitte's account that for care to count as such, it has to be taken up as care by the person you're caring for. Kitte says that care is an achievement term, in some ways like winning. You cannot accurately have been described to have won a race unless you actually came first. And she thinks care is a similar term. You can't actually be said to have cared successfully unless your care has worked, it's been taken up. So that leads us on to the question, what counts as a taking up of that care? Well, if you have two fully competent adults, if you like, the situation is possibly clear. You can have someone just acknowledge your care and say, yes, I felt well cared for. Clearly, though, there are many situations in which that's not going to be possible. And so again, Kitte makes this resort to flourishing. She says, even if the person rejects your care, even if they, for whatever reason, cannot acknowledge your care, maybe they're in a persistent vegetative state, if they can flourish, however narrowly or broadly you want to construe that term, then you can have been said to have cared. The next definition I want to look at is that provided by Nell Noddings. Now, Noddings starts a little further back than Tronto and Kitte, in that she talks a lot more about why we care, you know, why we even sort of have this disposition in the first place. So Noddings writes that the wellspring of ethical behaviour is located in human affective response. For Noddings, relationships are ontologically basic, and the caring relation is ethically basic. Noddings states a caring relation requires the engrossment and motivational displacement of the one caring, and it requires the recognition and spontaneous response of the cared for. Noddings believes that the success of our caring is determined as follows. The test of my caring is not wholly in how things turn out. The primary test lies in an examination of what I considered, how fully I received the other, and whether the free pursuit of his projects is partly a result of the completion of my caring for him. So two terms that I need to explain then are relational ontology. What does it mean for a relation to be ontologically basic? And what does it mean for the caring relation to be ethically basic? By relationship being ontologically basic, Noddings can and does, I think, mean two things. Firstly, it's that very basic fact that for all of us to be here today, given the state of like total dependence in which we're born as human babies, our very existence depends on someone having related to us, someone having cared for us. So that's the practical sense in which relationships are ontologically basic. She also means it in an existential way, in the sense that my personal identity is partly constituted by the relationship that I have with you, and this sort of interplay that we have with other people in terms of how we can come to understand each other, how we locate and situate ourselves. So that's relational ontology. By the caring relation is ethically basic, Noddings really thinks that caring and caring relationships is the first block, if you like, in any moral consideration. It's the first thing that we look at. It's the reason that we even consider moral questions. And it's then the basis on which other moral considerations, such as considerations regarding justice, for example, can come in. So she really thinks this primary relation that we have with something is prior to any consideration we may have about abstract considerations, such as does it have, I don't know, personhood? Are we interacting in a just way? She thinks these are important considerations, but they come a little later for her. So to situate this now more in the arena of farm animal care, so I'm going to make the assumption that we believe that we should care for farm animals. Again, I'm happy to talk about that assumption a bit more later, but for now I'm just going to assume not only that we should care for them, but if we do assume that we care for them, we think that we should care for them well. I've described some various answers that have been given to the question of what can constitute or indicate good care. Toronto talked about the integrity of care, Kitte about uptake, Noddings talked about enablement. So from these different examples and indicators of successful care, it can be deduced that caring is typically focused on meeting the particular needs of particular others in a way that is conducive to their flourishing. Also important is the meeting of those needs, in the meeting of those needs, is acknowledged as such by the recipients of our care. So it's not just that we think that we meet their needs, but in some way they affirm that their needs have been met. So I accept a lot of the kind of understanding and reasoning that goes with those accounts of care. I have a slightly different conception of care, which I'm going to gloss over. It's quite problematic, but also for time considerations. Basically, I agree with, for example, Nodding's assertion that our effective response to others' vulnerability is what is ethically basic. We respond to other people's vulnerability, and that is what puts us in the moral realm. I, however, think that action guidance should be provided by ethically sound discourse. I have deep anxieties about grounding considerations of action guidance and morality in considerations of flourishing. In short, because I think accounts of flourishing can be perfectionist and teleological in a way that's not helpful. So can we care for farm animals using either the three descriptions of care that I've looked at or my own description of care? So my first consideration was that if we are to care, we need to attend to vulnerability. So I'm going to just look at the question of killing animals. It seems to be a fairly ubiquitous and integral practice in food and animal production. So I'm just going to ask some questions. Can killing a healthy animal ever be an adequate response to the vulnerability of that animal? It seems at first base this is unlikely. I don't see how I'm responding to your vulnerability, meeting your needs, if I then go on to kill you. But interestingly, when we embed the practice, when we understand the practice, this isn't necessarily the case. And there are other arguments in philosophy that are possibly just purely philosophical arguments, that death doesn't actually represent a harm. Although we do obviously want to draw a distinction between killing and death. So I kind of left that as an open question because I'm not sure. At first face it seems no, but then I kind of have these other worries. Is it even possible, if we accepted any of these definitions of care, including my own, they all have a demand that we meet the particular needs of particular others. Is it even possible to attend to the particular vulnerabilities and particular needs of particular animals in the context of modern food production? I suppose when I ask that question, I'm thinking more of large-scale agricultural production. But even if you're a small-scale producer and you rely on this for your livelihood and you have, you know, various economic constraints, is that kind of even possible to have that consideration? And another question that I have, I apologize, all questions, not many answers. By working regularly with animals in the context of farming, do we become more or less aware of the vulnerability of the animals in our care? So if as I'm going to say that we should care, and this is what it is to care, are you better or worse situated as someone that cares for animals to administer that care? Do you become so embedded in your practice you can no longer see what's going on in front of you? Do you have to detach yourself from the vulnerability of those animals? Or do you become more keenly aware of it? Do you understand them better? I'm not sure, and these seem to be questions that very much need to be explored in the arena of what it is to care and how we can care well. So the next question I have is regarding morally adequate discourse. This relates to sort of a Habermasian discourse ethic, that the right way to come to, or the only way to find the right answer to questions is to have a discourse that is kind of adequate and representative and democratic. Now, morally adequate discourse in human-human interactions is fraught with problems. There's work on epistemic injustice, where we discredit someone's testimony, sometimes inadvertently in the case of implicit bias. Now, when we look at the question of morally adequate discourse in human-animal interactions, these problems are compounded. Epistemic injustice, lack of a clear voice in terms of, if animals can communicate with us, even if it's behaviorally, we still have to interpret that behavior. And we interpret that behavior within a paradigm, within our practices. There are gross imbalances of power. If my dog irritates me, not that I would, but I could, technically, just stick him in the dog home. He can't do the same to me. Our dialogue does not in any way take place on an even footing. What does this do to the kind of moral understanding that is generated from the interaction? And as we say, when we then look at the question of morally adequate relations between human and farm animals, the problems in trying to get an in any way helpful discourse just seem insurmountable. Epistemic injustice, lack of a clear voice, imbalances of power, the relationship is often instrumental and you have a conflict of interest. So if you were going to look at meeting something's needs, you're going to have to understand what those needs are. What I want to say is maybe we can't even understand what those needs are when we're really embedded in the practice. So as I hope I've made it clear, there's a bit of a tension in my work. It's looking as though my account is going to take a fairly dim and depressing view of a lot of currently accepted food animal practices in their production. However, many farmers, herds people, vets, stock people, whatever, involved in food animal production see themselves as caring for the animals on their farms. Are they all wrong? So I think this tension alluded to above points to a broader moral question regarding whether someone engaged in a so-called immoral practice can nevertheless act morally within the confines of that practice. And that's why looking at this through the lens of looking at food animal production through the lens of caring relationships provides us a very different answer to what's been given through, say, rights-based accounts or utilitarian accounts, which are going to look at the practice per se and are going to have a sort of generalization and just say, you know what, you can't do this practice, it doesn't work, it's just immoral per se. Whereas care ethics comes up with this interesting, really different answer, which is saying, well, weirdly, the practice you're engaged in doesn't kind of sound that okay, but you are nevertheless have the potential, if it's developed, to kind of care, and therefore you're kind of being simultaneously moral and immoral. So, some suggestions. So it seems at this point we could both advocate a change in paradigmatic farming practices, possibly towards a model of mutually beneficial relations. Can mutually beneficial relations include killing? And this alludes to a point that was, I thought, came up really interestingly in Rhoda's talk, where people will sort of want to involve themselves in the production, but distance themselves from the killing. But in some sense, you are involved in the killing. You are a step in that sequence. You can't then take yourself out of it. And a question that hasn't been addressed in care ethics literature at all is, if we kill something, does that undo what went before? So it's suddenly unclear at what stage and in what timescale we're assessing this situation as moral or immoral. If I raise you in a good way, and I look after you, and I care for you, and I meet your needs, in spite of all the epistemic worries, but I'm only doing it, but if I then later send you off to slaughter, was what I'm doing at that point immoral or moral? It just seems totally unclear on the care ethics literature, and I think this is why running care ethics through a practice like farm animal production is so useful, because it takes us out of our comfort zone. It also shows how much we need to develop our understanding of what it could be to have ethical discourse with something that can't talk. Possibly by invoking a recourse to third parties. That's been suggested in the literature, having a kind of advocate system, although that's also fraught with problems. or extending our concept of discourse to encompass various behavioural responses. As I said, this is very much a work in progress. My version of care ethics argues that our effective response to others' vulnerability is ethically basic, and that action guidance should be provided by ethically sound discourse. My account of care suggests that many current farming practices, practices that are arguably integral to farming, are unethical. However, many people involved in farming claim to care for their animals. This tension is problematical. The tension generates the question of whether the problem lies with my account of care, or with current farming practices, or both. I've argued for both, and I think we should need to advocate a change in certain farming practices, but also development of our concept of what it is to have ethically sound discourse.